The I Am Liberty podcast is about prepping on a community scale. Host James Walton encourages listeners to step away from the freeze-dried foods and the ammunition, to cement relationships and structure within your community through efforts like community gardening, co-op business and farming, as well as bartering and time banking. Stay tuned for my conversation with James next on this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said, to talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Welcome, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. You can hear us on Global Star Radio Network, that's gsradio.net, Saturday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Soaring Eagle Radio is heard on Talk America Radio, that's talkamericaradio.us, Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern and Sunday at 7 a.m. Eastern. We're heard on the Prepper Broadcasting Network, that's prepperbroadcasting.com, Monday at 2 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard. We're on the Friends Radio Network, that's on demand, and of course, SoaringEagleRadio.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn, all of the normal platforms. I'm pleased to welcome my friend James Walton to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. Welcome, James.
How you doing, Mike? Thanks for having me on.
Well, doing great. I've been looking forward to our conversation for a while. It seems like we had a couple of speed bumps there trying to get to schedule, but finally we made it, James.
Not uncommon, I'm sure, right?
That's a fact. Yeah, trying to coordinate schedules sometimes is difficult. You and I met through the Prepper Broadcasting Network, so I want to give a little hat tip to Glenn and the Prepper Broadcasting Network, a platform that hosts a lot of good shows, including yours, I Am Liberty. And so I thought, James, by way of introduction, you'd tell us a little bit about yourself, the I Am Liberty show, when it's heard, and that's live, by the way, folks. You can listen to the show live. And so I'll let James explain a little bit about that and how all of that got started. Let's start there, James.
That sounds good. If you don't mind, I would like to give a hat tip to Glenn as well and let folks know who are listening to Prepper Broadcasting to the Soaring Eagle Radio that we have 7 live shows now. We have a live show every single night of the week at prepperbroadcasting.com. We don't usually have a full roster like that, but we do now. For those of you who go there to listen, got to tune into those live shows, man. They're so much fun. Mine is one of them.
Yes.
And I Am Liberty is live on Wednesday nights, 9 Eastern. And we have a good time. You can also get my show at the IamLibertyShow.com, www.IamLibertyShow.com. That's my own website. And there I put up a show published through Libsyn, you know, just a regular podcast, not a live edition, but do about one a week there as well. So you can get on most weeks, you probably won't get 2 this week because of the holiday, but on most weeks you get one live episode of I Am Liberty at PrepperBroadcasting.com. If you go to IAmLibertyShow.com, you'll get the pre-recorded podcast as well, usually two different subjects.
Yes.
I'm on Twitter also at I Am Liberty Show. If you want to come over there and, you know, juggle characters with me, that's fine.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on Twitter, James. So, yeah, folks, I encourage you to go follow James and keep up with what he's doing.
So the I Am Liberty Show kind of was birthed out of a young dad who was just not ready. Not ready, definitely ready for responsibility of being a father and being a husband. That I didn't have too much trouble with. But I wasn't ready for anything outside of that. We had a hurricane here in Virginia. It was Hurricane Irene in 2012. It hit in September. I think it was mid-September. And my son was born early August 2012. And what I realized in that moment was we had a couple trees come down in the neighborhood. Power was out for, I think, 2 weeks. And it turned out that I had just what I had when I was a bachelor, just what I had when I first moved into an apartment in the house. I didn't have any tools. I didn't have any extra food. I didn't have anything. And it really opened my eyes to what I needed to be doing as a dad as opposed to what I thought. You know, I thought you go to work, you make the money, you bring the paycheck home, you do what you got to do in that regard, and everything will be fine. And that put me down a path that I didn't really know existed. I made the mistake of first watching Doomsday Preppers, which I will forever curse that show. I think that show really did a lot of damage to preparedness in America on a whole. So then I found something that made a little more sense, which was PrepperPodcast.com. A guy by the name of James Smith was running PrepperPodcast.com, and I started listening and I started building a knowledge base on what it is I needed to get done, started making checklists and that whole thing. Yeah. And one day I remember him coming on the air saying that he was looking for hosts, no experience necessary. Now, in high school, I was a lead singer of a band, so I had more than no experience because I at least knew how to work some audio and a microphone. But after that, I said, you know, I've never been afraid to jump into anything. You know, I've never been afraid to walk into any type of situation. So I said, you know what, here's just another opportunity. I created the I Am Liberty Show with the idea that I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm sure some people out there listening didn't know what they were doing either. So I invited the listening audience to go on the journey with me and find their way into preparedness the same way that I was. Yeah. You know, we could discuss mistakes. When I first started the show, I used to do a segment that was called Three Ridiculous Questions, something like that. It was a catchy title. Something about that. Three simple questions, something along those lines. And it was just me literally asking the listening audience, who knew a lot more about this stuff than I did, three things I wanted to know every show.
Wow.
And I gleaned incredible knowledge from that.
Sure.
Amazing things that still stick with me today. But, you know, we went on from that to having a nice listening base, having a live show at PrepperBroadcasting.com, and now having our own show over at IAmLibertyShow.com. And a lot more has come of it. I mean, the podcast has changed my life, but that's how it started for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you wrote a book recently, and it's just out. And by the way, where can folks get the title of the book, folks, is Come Unity, Community. Come Unity, Community. And James, where can folks get that book? Let's get that out of the way first.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the best place to get the book is going to be Amazon. That's where I'm selling it. You can get it up on my website as well, IAmLibertyShow.com. If you go there and you go to the Read tab, so I have a Read page which has that book, my newest book, and all of the books I've ever written. I've written quite a few books, but this one is my latest and greatest, in my opinion. It's a nonfiction. I haven't written many nonfiction, but this is my heart and soul, this book right here. This really is the answer that I've come up with for our society after 5, 6 intense years of really observing our society in close detail doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the best answer I could come up with. You know, I'm not that smart of a guy, but this is what makes sense to me, or at least a starting line.
Well, James, I read the book recently, and I want to commend you for it. I think it's done very well. I think that what you set out to do, you've accomplished. And as we were talking before we went on the air, that's one of the things that I always do when I receive a book from an author is I look at the table of contents, try to understand what it is that they're trying to do through the book, and then I scan the chapters and decide for myself, did they do that as a reader? Did they do that? Did they accomplish what it was they said they wanted to do? And in this instance, James, you did. And I think it's a very good read. So, folks, I encourage you to get a copy of James's book, Community. It's on Amazon, or you can go to iamlibertyshow.com. You probably got something there about it, don't you, James?
Oh, yeah, yes. There's a read page there. You click that read page, you'll get that and all my other books as well.
Okay. You made a statement in Chapter 2 that stood out for me, and I think that it'll resonate with our listeners as well. And here's the statement, and this is a quote from James's book, Chapter 2. "The isolation and the illusion that we can live without one another was what brought it home for me. The answer is in the community, a prepared community, one that can react and defend itself and has prepared to some extent to not fall into chaos," end quote. We really do need to fight the instinct of isolation, don't we? I mean, that seems to come along with the territory, or at least the idea when people first become acquainted with prepping, with preppers. It's this tendency that almost pulls them into isolation. We got to battle that tendency to isolation, don't we?
Oh, no doubt about it. We've got to battle that as a society in general.
Yeah.
You know, this scale is tipping in favor of technology, and what technology is doing is isolating us even more.
Yes.
You know, there's no getting around that. When you look into what's happening right now, mm-hmm. and the speed at which things are progressing, It's hard to really put your finger on what's coming, but I look at things like virtual reality. I look at things like augmented reality, which I think might even be the preeminent to, or maybe even better than virtual reality. And all I see is people creating this perfect world where they don't have to deal with heartache and struggle and going into that world and isolating themselves as much as they can. And I think that isolation really lends itself to a lot of this upheaval and this civil unrest that we see in the nation now, this incredible division that we see in the nation right now, you know, where people have this incredible party line, not even political, but in belief system, where if you cross that party line, it's literal violence yeah. coming your way.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost barbarism.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a great observation. I'm going to touch on that point. You brought up technology. We're going to touch on that point again before we're finished with our conversation, James. But building community, and that's what this book is really focused on, encouraging people to do, giving them some pointers, offering solutions. So building community addresses so many issues facing American society today. Now, on page 6 of your book, you list 8 by bullet point solutions, 6 issues, if you will, that Americans are facing. And I thought I'd just throw these out there for you, and then we can chat about those briefly. But through community, this is what you write, James, on page 6 for our listeners. James writes, "I believe through community we can achieve incredible things, things like those listed below, but by no means limited to them." And I thought this was fascinating, and you also spent a lot of time talking about these throughout the book. But I'm just going to read a couple of these, James, and then we can chat about them. But the first bullet point is disrupt the centralized food system through community gardening. Wow. So we really can have an impact on the corporate farms and the poisons that they're putting into our food system through all these toxic fertilizers and so on, simply by starting a community garden. And you've got some experience with that, don't you, James?
Yeah, well, you know, that's where I had to be real careful, and I still have to be real careful with the presentation of that idea, because what a lot of people get at first glance, and what I get some criticism for, is when I say starting a community garden, they take it at face value. Mm-hmm. So they think I'm saying, so you're telling me, James, that if I go plant a few rows of cucumbers and a few rows of tomatoes in some, you know, neutral land in my community, that that's going to be enough food to feed everybody.
Yeah, that's not what
you're saying. The community garden is the essential. It is step one.
Yes.
In creating cohesion within the community. It's literally step one, because one thing it does, it crosses all party lines. It crosses all racial issues, religious issues. We're just starting a garden. And there's nobody on planet Earth, well, there's going to be some people, but very few people on planet Earth are going to not like this idea.
Right.
And it's exactly the reason I started one in my neighborhood, because I knew I could grip as many people as possible, and we could get together around this garden and start a gardening group and get to know each other.
Yes.
And you build a team, you lay a base with this community garden. No, there's no way you're going to have a community garden big enough to feed everybody. But I liken it to sort of when the streetlights come on at night. Once you start talking about gardens, gardens, gardens all the time, before you know it, people start having their own gardens. Mm-hmm. They see the value.
Yeah.
You know, they go walk through the community. Oh, this is cool. And then just like the streetlights, houses start, all of a sudden you start seeing raised beds pop up out front, out back, and the houses start to turn on and people start to grow their own food.
Yeah.
And sometimes all it takes is just it's like a slight redirection of their priority. Mm-hmm. You know, their priority right now might be go home and turn on the TV and watch their show and whatever it is. And you just give a slight nudge, you know, a slight tilt to their priority and say, you know what, we got this space out back, you guys should have a garden too. And all of a sudden, it's just reprioritizing, and oh, now we have a garden.
Yeah.
And it's infectious.
Yes, it is. And it also has some subsequent benefits to doing that. Because again, remember, James has already said, the idea or the fact of the matter is, you're not going to start a garden that's going to fulfill the neighborhood or the community that you're trying to build. It's not going to fulfill all of their food needs, but it can certainly offset them. But there are other benefits to doing this. And again, the goal is to build community. And so your second bullet point there that you listed, James, was mentor the lost children of broken homes. Now, some might look at that and say, well, now how do you get from disrupting the centralized food system through community gardening to mentor the lost children of broken homes? And how are those two things related? Well, I think it's obvious.
Well, Mike, if you don't mind, I want to give your audience a secret that didn't make it into the book.
Sure.
Because it was something that didn't occur to me until I started getting a moderate amount of criticism about this community garden idea. And I started to think about it. I said, is there a use for this community garden outside of just bringing people together and, you know, the sparse amount of people who show up and pick what they pick? Yeah. We have a pretty substantial community garden now. I mean, we give food away to the food bank, our local food bank, from our community garden.
Wow.
That's how much we produce. But Wow. We also have a unique plot of land. We have a little park within our community that wasn't really being used. That being said, for my prepper listeners out there, one thing a community garden does do for you when it's in season, and also when it's come time to tear down, you may only have several rows of tomatoes, several rows of cucumbers, several rows of zucchini. But what you do have in that garden is a tremendous amount of seeds. Mm-hmm. So if you get to the point where you have an overage or maybe disaster does befall your community, what you have the opportunity to do is to harvest those fruits and those vegetables, not for the sustenance, but for the seeds inside.
Yes.
You know, a single cucumber holds, I mean, I'm guessing 100 seeds, probably something along those lines.
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah.
So you have a survival seed bank that's sitting up there And at the end of the year, it might be worth getting someone in your garden team to dry those seeds and hand them out to community members also who are gardening. But that's just a little secret side note on that community garden, an added perk.
Yes. Yeah. So what's the connection then to mentoring lost children? How's that work?
Well, they're human seeds.
That's
right. So it all culminates. Everything in the book culminates to how can we fix this nation? Yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't do a super patriotic, you know, I want to fix the nation book because I think they've been done a lot and I don't think they've worked, mm-hmm. you know, particularly when you go into the political spectrum.
Right.
But what I've identified is, especially when it comes to mentoring the children, you first have to get to know the people before you can ever even imagine talking to their kids.
Right.
You know, and getting to know their kids. The other important thing that we have to look at in this nation differently is the idea of mentoring. Mm-hmm. You know, the trust has to come first. When you think of mentoring, you oftentimes think about a broken home or a disheveled home or bad parents or, you know, no parents maybe. Mm-hmm. I think where we exist now in this country, Mike, with mom and dad always on the grind.
Yes.
Always on the grind. You know, mom and dad both work mostly all the time.
Yep.
And then some people work two jobs. Some people have a side business on the weekends that they do. Mm-hmm. We have to be really honest about what are the conditions that our children are growing up in? And what are they seeing? What opportunities do they have? What opportunities don't they have? And if you can set pride aside, if you can set your ego aside and say, you know, this young guy, I know him, I've known him for years. He wants to take my son out to do this on a regular basis, whatever it is, bowling, martial arts, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That's mentoring. And that's effective mentoring, I think, in this day and age.
Yeah.
I don't think it's casting judgment upon your ability to parent, but I think it's essential. You know, there's no getting around the fact that people aren't making the wages they need to make and they're crippled by the debt that they thought they had to incur to be successful in society.
Right.
Right. Everybody figured while they were in college, I'm in college, $100,000 in debt. That's a big deal. But once I get out, I'll make it right back. And that's just not the case anymore.
Yes.
And I think in order to survive, a lot of people are saying, I'm not going to have kids. But then they, you know, a lot of people are having children and we need help in raising children. I think that's one of the big things. When we talk about mentoring, it's not always seeking out a kid who is in dire straits. But if you work till 7 o'clock and you see your kid for 2 hours a day, what kind of parenting can you really do?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a huge issue. And that's a good perspective, James. And so this next point is it follows logically from that. And it is this: create safe and secure neighborhoods. That's especially important in urban areas. If we will take the time to bring the community together, our own neighborhoods together, for a project that has a payoff that everybody can benefit from, then that means you're engaging families, you're engaging their children. That gives you something in common to speak with them about. You gain their trust. You can encourage them as a family and come alongside them. And if you're so led, be a mentor to these children, then it just logically flows that your neighborhood is going to become a more cohesive unit of people, of like-minded people that are looking out for one another. So I thought that was a great point. And then this next one, James, it opens lines of communication for further community building. That's really what it's all about. That's what the book is. It's let's build a community wherever we live and get past all of these things that we struggle with commonly.
When it comes to communication, like I said, the community garden lays the ground. It gets nervous people who have become accustomed to a left-wing, right-wing, Democrat, Republican Yes. sort of society. It gets them comfortable enough to come outside and talk to each other. And then when you add the mailing list or the email list or we use an app called Nextdoor in my neighborhood, which is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's almost like sort of a, it's a neighborhood social media, basically, is what it is. You know, we have our own neighborhood. We have all of our neighbors in there. You can write up on the wall, whatever you want, you know. Mm-hmm. Neighborhood looks great. There was a robbery here. There was a break in there. Yeah. We have a street closing here. We're doing a cleanup day. When you start to open those lines, that's when you really start to build. You know, you really start to build a community, and you can monitor crime, and you can really create a good base for safe and secure neighborhoods, mm-hmm. just through communication.
Yeah.
You know, just we've had issues where we've dealt with people in our and we live in a cul-de-sac neighborhood. You know, not something that we really deal with often, but we've dealt with issues in the neighborhood through this communication network, through Nextdoor. You know, I mean, we bounce off things. You know, I saw them here at this time. I saw them here at that time. And you can solve problems just through basic communication like that.
Yes.
Where communication pays off big time is when disasters come rolling through. And I don't mean, you know, the end of it all type scenarios. I just mean we got a lot of snow. Who's snowed in? Who needs help? Yes. Who's got problems? Let's check on our elderly. That type of stuff changes everything.
Yes, absolutely it does. Yeah. Let's circle back, James, and touch on technology for a moment, because you mentioned that earlier, and I agree wholeheartedly with your perspective on it. Is it fair to say that there is a direct, although opposite effect between technology and community? And in other words, the more technology that's in use, the less community we begin to see, whether it's between family members, neighborhoods, or even the larger community. That is that a fair statement in your opinion?
I'd say so today.
Yeah.
I'd say so today. Yeah. I think we're in a social earthquake on every level right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We're living through the greatest social mix up, change up in history. And I think that with technology, I think eventually it'll even out. But right now, we've got all these new toys and all these new things, and I don't think we really even know how to deal with all the stuff that we have via technology. And it's very easy just to sit down in front of a phone or sit down in front of a computer and spend 3 hours learning about something new, you know, and then getting involved in an internet or an online community. And before you know it, you have no time to go outside or desire.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about community. It takes a very long time to build it up and takes a very short time for someone to drop out.
Yes. Yeah. So true. So true. You describe four major villains that people, they must conquer them, quite honestly, in order to build community together. I want to give those all together for our listeners, and then we can chat about those. But four major villains that people must conquer in order to build community together, and you list those as number one, centralization; number two, contamination; three, isolation; and four, dependence. Now, let me just say this again for our listeners' sake. What you mean by those four things is this. When you talk about centralization, you're talking about the monopoly of centralized food. When you're talking about contamination, James is talking about the contamination of our land and our water due to this centralization. And then when James is talking about isolation, he's talking about the isolation that's brought on by technology and changing culture. And then when you mix that with dependence, the fourth thing that we need to conquer, he's talking about the growth of government. Now, taking all of those things together form a very serious threat to our life and liberty as Americans. So, James, let's talk about those. Centralization, the monopoly of centralized food. Why is that something we need to get past or we need to conquer as individuals?
Sure. Well, centralization as an idea in and of itself it's a scary one that I think goes against all the things that we hold true here in America. You know, when we talk about the centralization of the food system, it takes tremendous amount of power away from people to change it. Mm. And that's the big issue.
Yeah.
You know, the big issue is that we, and when I say the food industry, I mean, and I have them listed in there.
Yes, you do.
In the book, but those big giant corporations, it sounds like a broken record. I hate saying the word giant corporations because it's been so beaten to death. But when it comes to food, it really is about 10 or 12 giant corporations that make almost all the food in the supermarket.
Yeah.
And it is a monopoly. And it's not that we have to go after these people and try to make them do something that they're unwilling to do. We can work outside of them.
Yes.
You know, we can work outside of them. It's not the every Saturday, I'm sure, no matter who you are, no matter where you are in this nation, on Saturday, there's got to be a farmer's market relative to you.
Yes.
You know, somewhere in your general area. And that's working outside of that monopoly and building on that. But so many people are unaware that there's even an issue.
Yes.
You know, and what we know from science now when it comes to nutrition is I'm not a big guy for limiting things or don't eat, ever eat this, never eat sugar, that type of thing. I mean, it's very big. It's a very big thing nowadays, but you do have to understand that what you put in your body affects you in a very big way. It affects your long-term health, your short-term health. It affects how productive you are as a human being. It even affects your mood.
Yes, it does.
And how you act to the people around you. So decentralization also has to do with governmental power as well.
Yes.
You know, there's an idea that we have to decentralize the power in the government. We'll talk about that more in dependence, but those centralized powers, be it in the food industry, in the government, even in the technological realm now, you know, the centralized powers in technology are very scary. When you see corporations like Google and Twitter and Facebook getting to be the size of what they are, unrestricted. I read a headline the other day that that Bezos, the owner of Amazon, is going to have control of $53 million worth of taxpayer money next year based on his company's sort of wheelings and dealings with the government and subsidies and such.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're dealing with something that's kind of unprecedented there.
Yeah.
You know, I always beware of the centralization of power. That's what I say.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree with that. Very, very, very adamantly agree with that, James. And contamination, and that we're really talking about our God-given responsibility to be good stewards of the land and water that we have, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, our lands... Our air, lands, and places, you know, it's an important thing. It's a very important thing. If we also have to be very mindful of the fact that if our lands and our air are contaminated, then so are our bodies.
Correct.
You know, and it's a pretty straightforward concept when you talk about pollution of the earth. But another layer of contamination that I didn't get into too much into the book is the medicine. And the medications that we take as human beings are contaminating our body as well.
Yes.
You know, and when we get into these situations with people taking mind-altering drugs,
yes,
or you look at something like the fentanyl crisis that's ripping through people in this nation, you know, that is a form of the way I look at it is that's a form of contamination as well.
Yeah.
You know, we're giving the land too much plastic. We're giving the land too much waste. We're giving and it can't process. And in the same sense, we're giving our bodies too much dopamine. We're giving our bodies too much medication. And the body can't process it either.
Right.
And we find ourselves in this desperate mode of survival, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely true. Isolation, James, the isolation brought on by technology. We touched on it just a little bit, but go ahead.
I think isolation, to be honest with you, is one of the most profound things that we're dealing with as a nation.
Yeah.
I think isolation allows you to, well, anytime you get to exist in a vacuum is horrible for a human, a 21st century human.
Yeah.
You know, maybe when years ago, existing in a vacuum assured your survival, but when we exist in a vacuum where we can scroll through our Twitter and we can go to our Facebook and only see people that we like and only see people that we agree with, you create a monster. You know what you create? You create an Antifa monster. Yes. That's what you create. You create a person who is unwilling to compromise and is literally ready to lay down violence because there is no human interaction there. There's never a chance for someone to say something that they disagree with. You lose serious ability to communicate effectively.
Yes.
You know, and when you can't communicate your needs or desires or your even just basic things at a workplace, mm-hmm. you know, when you can't communicate these ideas because of this isolation, things get bad and they get bad fast. I have a study in the book that says it was a man who did studies on people who were put in solitary confinement. Mm-hmm. And the study said that people's brains start to change within days of this kind of isolation, yes, you know, in the dark, in a cell by yourself.
Yes.
So you have to imagine that, you know, maybe that long weekend or those late nights or all that time that's compounded, you in front of the phone, you in front of the computer, you by yourself in your home in this vacuum. Mm-hmm. It's got to be affecting us mentally, and it's got to be taking its toll on how we interact with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely does. And I even think there's a spiritual dimension to this as well. In a physical sense, militarily speaking, we come up with phrases like divide and conquer, and that's very true. So that same strategy, the same methodology is used, in my opinion, in the spiritual realm. If we isolate ourselves from one another, how in the world are we going to build a community of believers? And I'm talking about folks, religious folks, that isolate themselves from other religious folks under the pretense that they don't want to be contaminated. Well, really, I think that's working against the whole point, biblically speaking, of community. So I just want to throw that in there, James, because I was thinking that as I was listening to you talk about isolation, I thought, man, this has a spiritual application as well. So that fourth one then is dependence, and that goes back to the growth of government.
Sure, definitely. We have over half of the nation receiving some sort of government funding, and it's a burden that obviously the taxpayer has to face, but it affects the way that people interact with their government. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, our government was never supposed to prop us up the way it's propping people up. Now, some of these payments, a portion of those 50% are receiving Social Security, which is money due to them. I agree with that. But when you think about the situation, you know, one of the things that always really drives me crazy when you talk about government dependence is that how we've created a monopoly on particularly single mothers. Mm. You know, the government has a monopoly on a single mother in a way that no one else can match, because you can't go to get a job and get free health care and get free food and get free housing from any job anywhere. So the idea that a mother with two kids, one who needs, you know, asthma medication, is going to get off welfare and jump into a minimum wage job at Walmart, it's just not going to happen. And it's for the sake of their children.
Great point.
You know, they're not going to get the insurance premium. They're not going to be able to afford it to begin with. They're not going to be able to afford to live the way they live. I'm not saying that they've made the right decisions to get to that point, but that's their reality. You know, that's their reality. And then you have a situation where what becomes of democracy when you have a mother who has to pull a voting lever for her benefit, no matter what the candidate is like. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter how despotic a candidate is, if they say, I'm going to keep your babies alive and make sure that you have food on the table as long as you pull the lever for me, it's a very big issue. Yeah. It's a very big issue. And the biggest part about dependence is, it robs you of your freedom. Yes. It robs you of your dignity and robs you of your liberty. And that's the biggest issue that no one talks about, mm-hmm. is that we are being robbed of our freedom. Yeah. And it comes with a mask, this idea that, oh, I'm going to help you. I'm going to give you this money. I'm going to give you this thing. And it's going to help you get back on your feet. And you realize you're being robbed.
Yes.
Freedom isn't always about success. Sometimes freedom's about complete and total failure. But we're being robbed of that choice. You know, we're being stymied. And with government dependence, that's the best you can get.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent point, James. I appreciate that perspective. And dovetails very nicely into this next question or next subject. You mentioned five great dividing assumptions, and you have these sprinkled throughout your book. And I just want to read these because, folks, we and you've heard me, if you're a regular listener to Soaring Eagle Radio, folks, you've heard me say this on many occasions, but we've been played by the political system. Now some folks want to point fingers at the D's, others want to point fingers at the R's, and the point is, the truth of the matter is, they're all the same, and we've been played. And we're told how to think. We're offered up proof and sound bites to support particular viewpoints. James, you cut through all of that, and you make some very good points. You had five of them, in fact. You call them five great dividing assumptions. And again, you put these in a couple of different chapters, so people need to read through the book in order to get these. But I'm just going to mention them to support what we've been talking about, these four major villains that we have to conquer. Well, part of the way that we're going to conquer is to wake up and understand what's happening to us as far as emotionally, intellectually, mentally, all of those things by the information that we take in. And so James suggests these five assumptions that are dividing Americans and really have a great number of Americans at each other's throats, sadly. And I say that with much sadness. But here they are. One, globalization is a right-wing issue. Two, the environment is a left-wing issue. Three, fracking is a left-wing issue. Four, you're a Republican or you're a Democrat. And five, preppers and survivalists are all white, right-wing Christian nuts. Now, let's just take those real briefly, James, and talk about why that's not true. None of those are true. They're just stereotypes, aren't they?
Well, they're all stereotypes. I mean, the whole idea behind the Great Dividing Assumption is, I could have wrote a whole book on Great Dividing Assumptions and titled that, you know?
Yeah.
But the whole idea is just cutting to the core with these core ideas, these hot button issues, you know, the prepping one was basically for my readers in particular, but
yeah.
All the other ones were very hot button issues in the nation right now where everyone is guilty of it.
Yeah.
You know, everyone is guilty of falling into one of those categories where you look at someone and you assume that you know what they're about and you know what they are and you know their flaws and their faults. Based on what they're wearing, what they're saying, what they have on their bumper sticker of their car, you know, that those are the great dividing assumptions, assuming that we know who a person is based on a few things that they've said.
Yeah.
You know, when you really get down to it, the mass of men and women live very unique lives where they fall on multiple sides of the spectrum,
Politically,
religiously, you know, all of that. We are the most unique creatures in all of the universe. And The idea that we can be pigeonholed into a right-wing conservative box, And that's supposed to fit everybody who's not a left-wing progressive Democrat, is crazy. It's a crazy thing. So those great dividing assumptions were put together to just really drive that home.
Yeah.
You know, some of them have stories that where I changed sort of my tune, and some of them are just a deeper look at it so that people would understand, oh, okay, this is a lot deeper than I thought.
Yeah. And if people can grasp this and understand this, then I think that goes a long way toward alleviating fears that people have of reaching out to their neighbors. And you even talk about that in your book, how some folks are leery about, you know, reaching out and trying to approach a neighbor and suggest ideas such as this, that, hey, why don't we get together and start addressing some of our common issues and see where this might lead? How do you help people to overcome those fears that they can't reach out to their neighbors, James?
Well, you got to recognize it. You got to recognize it. And then for most people, when I look at our society today, the reason that rejection is so terrifying is because they are so isolated. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have a person, and sometimes it's not even the person. Sometimes it's the people around the person who are isolated, and then the isolation happens to that person by default. You know, you move into some communities, and they're all outside all the time, and they're talking and getting to know each other. And a very outgoing person can move into a community that's very quiet, and no one comes outside. Yeah. And they can become, you know, affected by that isolation. But the reason I think that most people don't want to go out on that limb is that we live in a society that is terrified of rejection now. Yeah. You know, and that hits at all facets of life. I learned this lesson best from the 20-something men that I worked with in the restaurant industry. You know, growing up around Philadelphia and working in the restaurant industry there, I talked to a lot of guys, and they were frankly terrified to talk to girls because of rejection. And I saw that play out all through life. When I started to write this book and I thought about this same situation, I said, you know what this comes down to is the same thing. It comes down to isolation.
Yeah.
It comes down to the idea that you cannot stand to bear the idea of going to someone's door and them telling you, you know what, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And that's all they're going to say. That's in most cases, and you are going to run into people in your community that want nothing to do with your ideas. You have to be okay with that, too.
Yes.
But in the worst case scenario, if you grab a couple people and three out of the five tell you, I don't want to do that. I don't have time to do that. That's it. You just tell them, thank you. I appreciate it. And you move on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's going to get hurt. Nobody's going to have bad karma because of it. It's nothing like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a lot worse when you sit and you mull it over than it is when you get out and do it. So I would suggest anybody who's on the fence about it, just go do it.
Just go do it. Yeah. Yeah. That's good advice for sure. Well, we have to talk, even if we do so briefly, James, we have to talk about disaster preparedness. You do a lot of that. A lot of the guests that you have on do the same thing on the I Am Liberty show. They're experts in this field. So when we're talking about disaster preparedness, what should people begin to do, or perhaps what supplies should they begin to collect for emergency preparedness? What do you consider to be essential?
Sure. Well, if I get too long-winded, just let me know, because this is my dominion. You know what
yes,
I mean? This
yeah.
is what I don't know if you know this about me, Mike, but not long ago, I actually had to drop out of my full-time career. I started freelance writing in this niche specifically.
Oh.
And this is how I make my living. I live in this topic day and night.
You had not shared that previously. So that's very... very fortunate question then for us, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I had some family issues, some health issues. I had to shuck and jive a little bit, as life has you do from time to time. But to go back just a little bit, America was robbed of disaster preparedness twice in my short lifetime. So I'm sure it's been robbed before. The first time I seen America robbed of preparedness was the Bush era. The 9/11 era,
yeah.
When we did the code, the rainbow code mm-hmm. of emergency or threat level or whatever it
yes.
was called,
yeah. Yeah.
It made a mockery of the idea of being prepared for disaster. When we did the plastic taped around the windows, you know,
yeah.
we made a mockery of what disaster preparedness meant, and people shied away from it altogether. You know, instead of looking at it as, well, I could prepare for hurricanes, I could prepare for, they shied away from this idea of being prepared at all because they didn't want to be lumped in with this threat level and this, you know, this manic behavior.
Yeah.
We were robbed again when Doomsday Preppers came out. I could tell you a story talking to a highly respectable woman that I was working with who literally whispered across the table to me one time that she keeps extra water in her closet.
Whispered.
as though it was like a Soviet era discussion about overthrow, you know? And I looked at her and I said, this is a product of this stupid show that's on TV that has people so scared to be ready for the real life issues that happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's, and I think the government also does a poor job. I think FEMA, I think the government has great correspondents that could come on our television once a quarter, you know, four times a year maybe, and tell people, hey, it's this season, and we're going to do an hour long or a half hour long special on preparing for such and such thing. So I think we're being failed in many ways. I think we're being failed in many ways with disaster preparedness. And at the end of the day, it is your responsibility, right? Where I always tell people to start, it's a very cool thing to talk about urban survival. It's very cool to go to tacticaldistributors.com and start buying, you know, plate carriers and all this cool gear that's out. There's so much cool gear. I love gear. Don't get me wrong. But regional disaster is first. Before you do anything, before you think about any prepping, any anything at all, any economic collapse, any kind of issue like that. Pandemics, don't even think about it until you shore up where you live and what happens every year. Regional disaster, something you never read about because it's not a super, I'd call it sexy topic. You know, it's not one of these topics that gets people real, you know, excited.
Right.
So the idea that I live in Florida, I don't personally, but I'm saying if a person lives in Florida, they should spend at least a year completely getting themselves ready for the worst hurricane. You know, do I have the ability to stay home for days? If I lose water, what are my options? If I lose power, what are my options? And then, of course, if the hurricane's bad enough, do I have a plan? Do I have a bag? Do I have a book full of all my important items that I can get out of Dodge fast?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's preparing for a regional disaster. And I think all across the nation, we have these. We have this great bit of information that we know every year. When you live in the Northeast, you're going to get snowed in.
Yep.
You know, there's no reason why you should be running out to get food and shovels. And if you live in the Northeast, you're getting snow every winter. You've got to be ready for that first.
Yep.
So I would say build your base around your regional disasters. And then if you want to get into the mores of the really bad stuff that is pretty likely to happen eventually to some degree or another, then feel free to get into that. But by looking at your regional situation, you're going to build a base of preparedness already. You're going to be prepared to heat your home when the power goes out. You're going to be prepared to deal with the power outage. You're going to be prepared to deal with the water going away for a few days. And all that stuff builds a perfect base, you know?
Yes. Yes.
It really is the push towards self-reliance, first and foremost, when it comes to those regional disasters. How can you rely upon yourself if a tornado comes, a hurricane, whatever it is that you're dealing with?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to also mention something that might provide a solution, and it may very well be something, a system that perhaps folks have been looking for. But you mentioned this in your book, and I have to tell you, James, I went out on YouTube and checked it out, watched some videos on the system, and I was quite impressed, actually. And just as a disclaimer, I don't have anything in this. This is the first time I've ever heard of this system. James mentioned it in his book. But it's called a PermaCube system. And folks, you can go out there and get all the information you need on it. But I thought that was a great way in a very small footprint to do a lot of different things to help, really help not only in preparation, but in growing food, in having fresh produce, in compost. I'll let you talk about it, James, because it was such a cool system that I thought, wow, I'm going to make sure I mention this so listeners go out there and look at it. The PermaCube system.
Yeah, sure. Jim Gale, realtor, investor, really great guy, approached me about 2 years ago with this idea, this PermaCube idea. It's now called FUUD, F-U-U-D, They went through a little bit of a rebranding.
Okay.
You can still get the information at permacuberevolution.com if you want to go see it.
Okay.
But I just got an email from them not long ago, maybe a week or two, and he was telling me that they went through a rebranding. They're almost ready to start pumping them out, but they're calling it food now. Okay. F-U-U-D.
F-U-U-D, food. nice.
Neither here nor there. It still does the same thing, which is what you were excited about, and I think most people would be excited about.
Yeah.
It is very much a small unit, self-reliance structure that has many different options. One of the core tenets of it is that it can create hydroponic food.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go lettuce and vegetables right in these beds. The unit also produces chickens and has a small chicken coop built into it. There's two solar dehydrators on the back of the unit, so anything that you do grow, you can also dehydrate with the power of the sun.
Yep.
Some of the various units also have, I don't know if I mentioned this in the book, but some of them actually have bat houses.
Really? No, I didn't see that.
In order to collect the guano for your compost,
mm-hmm.
Soldier flies, some of them are creating what's called soldier flies, and these larvae you can feed your chickens. So you have your chicken food there as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the latest things that they're doing is they're putting these machines in that are sucking the humidity out of the air and creating potable water, which is just an awesome thing. I've seen these before in use in the third world.
Yeah.
But they're basically taking the humidity out of the air and turning it into water. Now, you can use that water for your chickens if you'd like, or if things got real bad, you can use that water for yourself. It's 100% potable.
Yeah.
The water gets boiled once it's pulled from the air, and then you drink it.
Yeah.
But the machine is it's not really a machine, really. It's kind of a standalone structure, and it takes a human being to work it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it definitely takes a human being to work it, but everything is right there in this centralized location, which really makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. Folks, I really encourage. I was impressed when I was watching the videos. F-U-U-D, if you look for that or search for it on YouTube, then all kinds of stuff will pop up. James, at the end of the day, here's the takeaway from your book. At the end of the day, we all have the opportunity to be agents of change. Now, we can choose that path, or we can choose to just go along for the ride. I choose to be an agent of change, and I think that's what you're advocating in your book, too.
Yeah, well, one of the tough things about my book, and I have a big warning in red in the beginning of the book. It's the third page of the book before you even get to the title, or before you even get to the contents, you get a big red warning, and the warning is, we're going to discuss the problems of the day and how to fix them. And it's going to take you to work and to pull it off. So you're going to walk away from this book either knowing, I know how to change this world for the better. I'm either going to do it and see the change and be proud of it, or I'm not going to put in the work, and then I have to live with the consequences. You know, so there's this weird element in the book that kind of, a lot of books like this I've always seen have laid the blame squarely on a monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they've laid the blame on a giant, overfunded, bloated government, or on a, you know, a group that's sort of different than their own.
Yeah.
I really wanted to lay the blame on the reader and put a little pressure on the reader and say, look, you know what to do.
Yes.
Now you got to go do it.
Yep.
You got to be an agent of change. You don't have a choice, mm-hmm. or else all this that we have is going to come crumbling down, and that's a guarantee.
Yep. Yep. Folks, go out to IamLibertyShow.com, connect with James, drop him a line, email him. You can listen to him live, and that is Wednesday nights on PrepperBroadcastingNetwork.com. PrepperBroadcasting.com. It's Prepper Broadcasting Network, but the website, PrepperBroadcasting.com, and that's Wednesdays. And James, is that 9 o'clock Eastern?
9 p.m. Eastern, yes, sir.
9 p.m. Eastern. So, folks, check out the book, Community. And that's on Amazon, or you can get a link to it on James's website. James, I really appreciate you joining me today and having this conversation. It was very encouraging. Thank you.
Mike, you're I say this with no jest at all. I'm a lucky man that at 31 years old, I figured out sort of a life's purpose. And this is that purpose. This is the most powerful I can be. And you've given me the ability to reach all these great people that listen to your show. So you've empowered me in such a way. There's no way I could, you know, I'm forever indebted. You know what I mean? These are people I could never have reached. And you've given me the opportunity to explain this book, which is my only answer to this society right now. And I just really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, James. Look forward to chatting again very, very soon. God bless you, friend.
Thank you, sir.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek